Hi, everyone. Just a content warning that this episode does feature some discussion on suicidal ideation and suicidal thoughts. If you need resources in that area, we'd refer you to SamaritansHope.org, which is the Good Samaritans website. The Trevor Project is also a really good resource for folks that need additional support in these areas. Thanks for listening.
So there's something funny, sort of punchline about deadheads getting their hair that they haven't cut in 30 years cut off as a random act of terror by somebody at a concert.
And they would never know because you wouldn't even feel it. And then they just go home.
Because you're that good. You're that good with the scissors.
And then I think like they're going to get home and they're going to be like, what happened to my ponytail? And like to me, oh my gosh, that really tickles me. This is Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And you're listening to Never Mind the Music. What are we talking about today, Mark?
I want to talk about Kylie Minogue. When you first think of Kylie Minogue, which song do you think of?
I just think of Australia and Gay Icon.
Okay. So you're thinking more Can't Get You Out of My Head, less Locomotion.
Oh, less Locomotion.
See, I would think, to me, when Kylie Minogue came out with Can't Get You Out of My Head, listeners, we're talking about Can't Get You Out of My Head by Kylie Minogue. So this song came out in 2001, and it felt to me like a kind of comeback. I know her career kept going in between the 80s with her cover of Locomotion. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, buddy, do the
Locomotion. That was a cover?
Yeah, the Locomotion was written by Jerry Goffin and Carole King.
Wow.
Back when they were doing the team for the Brill Building stuff. The original first sort of hit version is by Little Eva. So that's the Little Eva version. But then there's a Grand Funk Railroad version in the 70s also.
Okay.
And then the 80s version by Kylie. And she had a career all throughout that decade and then in the 90s in Australia. But it wasn't really until this song hit
that she had a resurgence.
That had a resurgence. So you associate her more with this tune because that's more, you know, maybe when you were in the clubs, literally, and of the age group. And you mentioned Gay Icon. Yeah, because she became a dance music sort of centerpiece in particular. This song did reach pretty big heights, though. It hit number 7 in the U.S., which was her first top 10 hit since the Locomotion in the United States. And I don't really know any of her 90s stuff. I don't know if you do.
I don't. I'm not a huge... It's not to say I'm not a fan of hers. Like, I think she's great. It's just not my preferred style of music.
The sort of dance pop thing.
Yeah, like, it's just not what I would go to on my own free will.
Well, I keep coming back to the dance pop, so
I love it. I love learning about it, and I think I can make connections to... I definitely lean more singer-songwriter.
Sure.
In my musical taste.
We just got to have a four in the floor behind that acoustic guitar, right? And then I'm in. No,
I don't know what that means, but
four
yes.
In the floor?
Yeah.
Four in the floor is the kick drum, the ba, 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 ba.
Yeah,
I in like every... I mean, you can hear it in this song.
Sure.
Every four beats. So the kick drum is the one on the floor, right?
You want
to
be able to like step touch when you're dancing.
It's a disco beat. Step touch? What's the term?
Like a step touch.
What's step touch?
Just like a white person dance. Like step touch, step touch.
I'm white. Are you a good dancer? Do you dance?
I'm a good dancer.
What kind of dancing? Did you like study dance?
I like I took dancing when I was a kid for sure.
What kind?
I did tap. I can still tap dance.
Okay, I'll see that at some point.
No, you probably won't.
Okay.
I would need a lot of margaritas to make that happen. But I did jazz and lyrical and ballet. Like, I'm a good dancer.
Wow, okay. Do you have good rhythm, too?
I have good rhythm, yeah.
Nice.
I'm a good singer, too.
I can't believe I haven't heard that.
You won't.
I'm sure you're lying. I'm sure we will. I never learned to dance, but I'm a musician, so I have at least the rhythm.
Yeah. No, I know, like, fundamentals. Like, I know technical, like, how to dance.
That's cool.
Like, tap dancing, for sure, was my favorite.
Listeners, check YouTube. Maybe there's a 90s.
There's not. There was no footage because we didn't have any technology then.
There were definitely video cameras back in the 90s.
I think there's like a cassette, like a VHS tape of a dance recital.
That's right. And it's on YouTube right now.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. So Rolling Stone listed Kylie Minogue as the third best Australian artist of all time. I want you to tell me your guesses of who else was in the top five
of Australian artists.
Australian musical artists.
Musical artists of all time. Oh, gosh.
Can you get anybody else in the top five?
Colin Hay.
Colin Hay from Men at Work.
Yeah.
So,
is he in there?
Men at Work is at 25.
What?
I would have thought the Land Down Under guys, first of all, Man at Work's awesome.
Awesome.
I would have thought they would have been top 10 easy. They are 25. This is, of course, just Rolling Stone.
Sure.
Rolling Stone is just a collection of journalists. They could be incorrect. This is not objective.
I got more. What about ABBA?
ABBA? Mm-hmm. Very much Swedish.
Okay. Well, yeah, notably Swedish.
Sweden
actually
is the Australia of the North Pole.
Sure.
It's the southern, it's south, further south than where Santa lives, so it counts as Australia.
Oh, that's why I was getting confused. Okay. How about Belinda Carlisle? Is she Australian?
I don't think so.
Heaven is a Place on Earth is a great song. That was my jam when I was in third grade.
Belinda Carlisle is American.
Oh,
so
well, too bad for
not
her.
Not Australian. America is the Australia of Canada.
Sure. That makes sense.
Should I help you out? Number five is Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
Okay, great.
Number four, INXS. You know, I always thought INXS was English.
I think people get Australia and England confused a lot.
Yeah. England is the Australia
of Scotland. The United Kingdom. Yeah.
Yeah. Number three, of course, is Kylie. Number two, Sia.
Oh. Oh, I thought she was British too.
It's a good choice. And then number one, AC/DC, Rolling Stone. Yeah.
AC/DC.
Silver Chair was in the top 10.
AC/DC? Is Australian?
You don't know AC/DC?
I know AC/DC. I didn't think they were Australian.
What do you think the A in AC/DC stands for?
Well, now I'm guessing it's Australia. Australian District.
It definitely
Columbia.
Doesn't stand for that, but they are an Australian rock band.
What does it stand for?
You don't think it just stands for the alternating current, whatever current thing?
No, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like the toilet flushing?
No. AC/DC refers to, it's two ways of doing electrics stuff. Oh. So like alternating current versus direct current, two types of sending power through a device. I assume that's what they're talking about.
Powerhouse rock anthems.
It's also a euphemism for bisexuality, but I don't think that's what they're going for. I think that may have come afterwards. Anyways.
Down under,
so,
indeed.
Australia. All right. So Kylie Minogue, let's get to it. So this song, Can't Get You Out of My Head, from her record Fever, once again from 2001, a bit of a resurgence in the United States. This is written by Kathy Dennis and Rob Davis. She didn't even write it, and that's perfectly okay.
It's okay.
But credit needs to go to the songwriters. Kathy Dennis wrote Toxic.
Oh,
which
Britney Spears.
You may know. Yeah.
You do.
Have you heard the orchestral version of Can't Get You Out of My Head?
No, but I would love to.
So Kylie's been busy. She made this in 2012. She did a whole record of orchestral arrangements of songs.
Like for the dentist office?
I don't know. I think this might be a little too intense for the dentist, but...
Oh, she's still singing. Did she record it at the Sydney Opera House?
I don't know the answer to where she recorded it. It does not sound like that's in an opera house. So
I don't know.
I think that would have a little boomier sound.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's nice. I feel like we need that beat, though. That's
you'd like the four to the floor.
The four and the floor. Yeah, that's right. So I want to talk about the variation in this melody. This is related to back when we had the episode about Paramore.
Oh, loved that one.
With Hayley
Williams.
That's What You Get, right? With Hayley Nicole Williams. You know, I know her name because we made such a big deal about her middle name.
Yeah. It's the best one.
We talked in that one about motivic development.
How
a small
did.
Idea is slowly transformed.
Mm-hmm.
This is simpler than that. I'm going to talk about one melody that they established. We just heard it. It's the la 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 that is varied throughout the song, right? So instead of it going through all sorts of kind of complicated transformations like what Paramore was doing, we have one theme that gives us multiple melodic ideas throughout the songs just through variation. Let's listen to our main idea. We can call this the theme. Another great wordless melody. Now this hook is just two notes. They're in the key of D minor, though sort of, listeners, if we want to get nerdy, maybe it's D Dorian, depending on which part of the song we're listening to. But we'll talk about that another time, if at all. Here's that hook alone.
It's so simple.
But the cool thing about it is we get something called syncopation. Have we used that term yet in this podcast?
Well, I think so. I use it a lot because it's one of the only terms I know.
Cool. Yeah. Shoot, what is it?
It means like it's syncopated.
Cool. Syncopation means it's syncopated. Could you please define syncopated?
Oh, sure. Oh, I got it. I remember. There is an equal space between notes.
Silence.
right?
No. I don't know what you mean. I'm
like
hesitating.
It's measured. It's really like on the beat. Like it's there's no eighth notes or chord notes.
Syncopation
like
the opposite of, it means it is off the beat.
Oh.
So if on the beat would be the four on the floor drum line, bum, 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 bum. Sure. Syncopation would be something emphasizing against that. Bum, bum, bum.
Oh.
So I'm going to count through this piano melody.
Sorry, Joe Mulligan, if you're out there.
Who's Joe Mulligan?
Joe Mulligan's the best music theory teacher in Upper New England.
Mr. Mulligan might be a little offended that you don't remember syncopation, but
I remember it, but I just am not correct.
So you were on the right track. You're just sort of, it's the opposite.
I think I'm thinking of staccato.
Staccato means short, sort of.
That's
similar words.
Thinking.
So syncopation means something's off the beat. So if we start this melody, the la la la's start on the beat. We have three of them on the beat. And then the next measure, they're off the beat. I'm going to count along 1, 2, 3, 4. See if you can follow. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Did you hear how some of those bum, 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 bum were pushing against my count, right?
Sure.
So it's so simple. It's two notes, but it's very danceable and catchy two notes because of that syncopation that works against the drums. And I think the catchiness of this fits. The song seems like it's a love song, but the idea of can't get you out of my head could either be a drug reference, right? I'm thinking of the failure tune Stuck on You, which sounds like it's about a jingle, but is about drugs. Or music, right?
Yeah, I think of music when I think of this song.
Yeah.
That can't get you out of my head. This song gets stuck in my head sometimes.
And I think that's perfect, right?
It's so
catchy.
Meta.
Who needs words when we got la la la, we've got such an infectious little theme there. It's almost like she remembers the tune but forgot the words.
Sure.
Is sort of what I imagine when I hear this part.
I love that.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
So let's get to the verse and I want to see how this transforms. So that sounds like a different melody, but it's built around those two notes. It starts with the lead up to that first note, the F, and then goes down to the lower note, the E, with some notes in the middle. So here's that same verse again, but I've put the piano playing the hook on top of it so you can hear them together.
That is such a great remix, Mark. I'm surprised that she hasn't come down to this studio and said, come with me, Mark Poppany.
Your sarcasm hurts me, Nicole.
You're famous now.
But
Bing, bing, bing.
That bing, bing, bing is her original tune. Yes. And what she's doing is taking the shell of that tune and added some, we could call it embellishment, some notes going in and out, some faster notes to fit the words. But it's fundamentally still that F going down to the E with some, you could say, noodling kind of happening around it, right?
That's
some
what Joe Mulligan notes. Would always say.
Noodling?
Noodling.
Well, band teachers are probably annoyed with noodling because, you know, the trumpet player is just going while he's trying to talk to the
bassoonist.
Stop
noodling around.
Exactly, right. Mm. Guitarists, I mean, we're the worst for noodling.
All they do is noodle.
That's right. Noodling is not a music theory term, but boy, is it a music term. In the pre-chorus, we get yet another sort of transformation, variation of this theme. So here's our original hook. And now we get. So it's accelerated. It's the same notes, F to E, though now there's a D in the middle, but it's happening twice as fast on these long notes. And then it happens again, slight variation on that. And then one more time, back to the original longer version. All right, so we've heard three sections of this song. All of them are essentially the same melody reimagined with three variations.
And it's so funny because the last section you just played, I feel like I've never heard that before. I'm sure I have.
Really?
But like when I think of this song, I don't think of that part of it. I think of the hook.
And this is an interesting example now that you're mentioning that because we haven't even heard what I would call the chorus yet.
Sure.
But the hook and the chorus in the song are not the same thing. I think the most catchy, well-known part is the la, 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 la. But the, you know, won't you stay line, I think is the lyric. We'll hear that in a few minutes. But that is related, but very different and not, I don't think, nearly as well-known. But yeah, so these three variations give us kind of the musical material of this entire song. And it's really simple, but that's part of what keeps it catchy, though. Sounds like this part's not quite as catchy, but without the syncopation,
sure.
It's less catchy. Something having a rhythmic hook is just as important as a melodic hook. And isn't rhythmically very fun.
It's not fun.
It's just half notes, right? Nothing fancy
sounds
about
like
half notes.
Sounds like a Gregorian monk chant.
Right. It does. Shout out to the monks.
Shout out to the monks out there.
If you're listening.
They're probably not.
Send us some chats.
Oh, and some wine, too.
Send us some chants. Oh, yeah. And the monks in like Germany and France,
they're
the ones who make
it.
The good stuff with like the chartreuse and all that. That stuff's brewed by monks.
They're like getting into it.
Okay. So this kind of move, the idea of variation, of course, classical music aficionados know the term theme and variations, which is where you'd have an entire piece, maybe a kind of long piece that's nothing but one melody put through a bunch of variations. And you might hear the melody in its simplest form, and then the next one will have a bunch of notes, and then there'll be one where it's got it higher and changes the key, and they just vary one idea. But this is pretty common even in pop music, where you'll have different sections of a song be essentially variations of the same catchy hook. And the simpler the hook, sometimes the better. So here's one example. This is Mr. Brightside by The Killers from 2003. We have a two-note melody, and all three parts I'm going to hear essentially are just variations of that two-note melody. Coming out of my cage and I've been doing just
fine. Gotta be down because I want it all. You love The Killers, right?
I like The Killers a lot, yeah.
Yeah, another good friend of mine really is like a very big fan of The Killers, and there's, I'm sure, a lot of you out there, but...
I haven't been following them lately, but I love that sort of 80s retro thing that was going on in that era. Here's the pre-chorus. We have that melody stretched out a little bit, but it's still just the alternation of those two notes. And then the full hook. All right, next example. David Bowie, Rebel Rebel, 1974.
Classic.
And then slight variation when we get to the actual chorus section.
These are all songs that do get stuck in my head quite a bit.
Yeah. And I think that song is also reinforced by that guitar riff, yeah, which is basically playing the same thing also, right? One more example. This is Born in the USA. Bruce Springsteen, of course. 1984. Here's the verse. And here's the hook. You already know it. Also because it sounds exactly the same as the verse.
Yeah, right.
So Kylie's not alone in, well, I should say, Kathy Dennis and Rob Davis are not alone in constructing songs in this way. And really the only vocal part of the song that doesn't follow this pattern exactly has a little bit further removal. It's more like what Paramore was doing, mm-hmm, where the theme is being transformed in a real way. And that's the chorus section, which you also may not remember.
I don't remember it.
Wow. Okay.
I have a notoriously bad memory.
Right.
Though.
But you remember la, la, la.
I'm not a huge Kylie Minogue person.
Right.
I mentioned that previously.
You're a medium sized Kylie Minogue.
I even like small fries.
So we have this stay. Guess what? That's a descending half step, though, just like F to E. It is similar enough. It's like you took that other melody we've heard. We've heard D, F, E a few times, and you just move it up at a fifth to A, C, B. Becomes.
That progression's missing a note for me. I want,
oh, yeah,
to go down again.
So it's very unresolved. And when we listen to the actual placement of that melody within the chords, do you remember our Spandau Ballet episode,
yes,
on True?
Yeah.
How I talked about how the high notes, the money notes of that song, were often dissonant parts of the chord, clashing,
yeah,
parts
loved
of the
it
chord.
Loved it.
Like in Marvin Gaye, we heard the same thing. Guess what? This first note, the high note, is a seventh of a minor seven chord, and then it goes down to a note out of key, which is the ninth of a minor ninth chord. Listen. So if you're hearing it feel unfinished, it's because it is. It's an unstable, juicy part of the song.
Wow. When you said that you wanted to cover this song, this idea of like not being able to get something out of your head stuck in my head, and I kept thinking about it. Oh, and I was thinking about, you know, how do songs get stuck in our head? And I think that you're addressing a lot of that here with the fact that they're simple patterns that are very syncopated, very easy to follow, and that are easy to wrap your head around. So what I'd love to talk with you about this is when you have thoughts in your head that you want to get them out. You don't want these thoughts to kind of seep into your subconscious. We call those intrusive thoughts. Have you ever heard the term intrusive thought before, Mark?
Sure. I feel like I've heard it in the context of truly negative things.
Sure.
Like intrusive thoughts of self-doubt or even self-harm or things like that.
Yeah, there are definitely like clinical presentations of intrusive thoughts that are, I'm not going to say worrying, but maybe that's a good word. But things that, as a clinician, you'd be concerned about and you'd want to follow up with. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to talk about like funny intrusive thoughts that you might have had. It's a very normal thing. And I feel like culturally, we don't address our intrusive thoughts a lot. We don't say them out loud because we worry what people might, how they might judge us.
We don't say them out loud, Nicole, because we learn to have filters, though.
Oh, right.
Like functioning in a society,
yes,
especially as someone who at one point was an adolescent male
Yeah.
Cisgendered, heterosexual male.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep some thoughts in your head or else bad things happen and people won't
yeah,
be friends with you
anymore.
But
wouldn't it have been normalizing if you were having these like weird thoughts? If you just said that to a friend and they said, oh yeah, I have thoughts like that too.
Totally.
I have a couple of funny intrusive thoughts that I would like to share with you if you're open to come with me on this journey.
Do it.
Yeah. So sometimes I'm walking down the street and I see everyone walking with their faces in their phone and my intrusive thoughts tell me to slap the phone out of their hand. Mm. Does that ever happen to you?
I think not. You're saying specifically with the phone?
Yeah,
no,
or just something
I don't
like
think
that.
I mind the phone as much as a lot of people mind it.
Sure.
So no.
But it's that filter, right? There's something stopping. I think of it all the time. Wouldn't it be funny if someone's walking down the street with a cup of coffee and I slap it out of their hand? Or one time there was an old lady walking down the street holding a bunch of cupcakes, like in a cartoon, just waddling with the cupcakes like a grandma. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if I just pushed those cupcakes to the ground? I would never do that, listeners. Never in my life would I be in my pottery studio and I see all the freshly glazed pots on someone's shelf. And I think I should just swipe all those off the shelf.
I don't know if it would it be funny if you slapped it. I think
no, it's only funny if I think about it, but it's not funny if I do it.
Okay,
right? Do you see the distinction?
Yeah, maybe.
Do you have any things that you think of? Wouldn't it be funny if, like, I was just at a Grateful Dead concert and there were so many middle-aged white men with ponytails. They don't need their ponytails anymore. It's time to go.
Oh my God, bring scissors.
Wouldn't it be funny?
So that's fun. That I think. You know what it is? It's positionality of people, right? It's punching up versus punching down. So I think of,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Some people in my life are middle-aged white guys with ponytails, but they seem like a more valid target than an old lady with cupcakes.
Yes.
I think someone's got to think of the cupcakes also. That's not fair to the cupcakes.
No.
So there's something funny sort of punchline about deadheads getting their hair that they haven't cut in 30 years cut off,
right?
As a random act of terror by somebody at a concert.
And they would never know because you wouldn't even feel it. And then they just go home.
Because you're that good. You're that good with the scissors.
And then
right?
I think like they're going to get home.
That's
and
right.
They're going to be like, what happened to my ponytail? And like to me, oh my gosh, that really tickles me. Just thoughts like that.
Yeah. And I think that is an example of can I tell you my prototypical bizarre intrusive thought? This is going back to childhood. And tell me if you've had this. It sounds like your intrusive thoughts are more about doing kooky stuff to other people.
Yeah, they're more about like deviance.
Deviance,
I
right?
Have, like,
because
some deviant
you spend so much
thoughts.
Energy, especially when you're younger, trying not to be that or not to be perceived as that. So what my head goes to when I think of intrusive thoughts is being a kid in the back seat of a car, and I would find myself, I just had to lock the door. Why? Because often enough, I would get this feeling of, what if I just opened the door right now? And took my seatbelt off. Not necessarily that I was going to go out of the car. And this is like on the freeway, I'm 7 or 8 years old or whatever. What if I just opened the door when my parents are going 65 or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
What if? And I would lock the door because the thought, I couldn't stop the thought. And the thought itself made me scared. You're talking about, wouldn't it be funny? I'm thinking like the intrusive thoughts I'm talking about were scary to me that I couldn't control. Oh my God. And I think of this now because I've thought of it more recently because as I became a parent, I would get crazy. Children, my children, I love you, but being sleep deprived.
It makes you crazy.
Makes you crazy. And I can remember like thinking crazy stuff like,
yes,
what if I just drove off a cliff right now?
Right.
Or when I'm driving my kid around, or what if I walked across that bridge that with the stroller, and it's like, or some kind of, it would usually be some ludicrous, unsafe thing that I would never want to do. This was not, oh, I'm mad at my kid because they're crying. No, it's more just like the sense of fragility would cause this what if I question. And the what if I could be literally anything. What if I dropped their food on the ground and they were crying? What if I did this? And I never wanted to do those things, but the thoughts would be there, and then I would feel kind of awful about it.
Yeah.
It kind of like you might feel if you're like, what if I just upended that lady's cupcakes?
Yes.
You feel guilty about it.
Yes. And what you're describing, and thank you for sharing that. I know I'm turning into a therapist now. That must
I'm
have been
profoundly uncomfortable.
No,
now.
That must have been vulnerable. It's a vulnerable thing to say. But the reality is that every parent has those thoughts. Every parent has those thoughts of like, what if I'm walking down a hill with my stroller and I just something just crazy happens and I just let go of the stroller? What could? And then you get this like wave, this adrenal response of like, oh, shit.
And
like,
you tighten your grip on that stroller.
I'm not safe.
That's like me locking the door. Mm-hmm. Or you putting the scissors away at the Dead concert.
Right. Or just not bringing the scissors. Not bringing the scissors. Not even provided. And like, and that's when we go from, you know, I started with some like really kind of funny anecdotal intrusive thoughts. But what you're talking about is really adaptive, because what it's helping you do is make sure your kid is safe. Mm. Right. It's helping you make sure the door is locked, or helping you make sure that you hold on to that stroller. So because your brain is telling you this is what could happen if you mess up.
And
so don't mess
you're
up.
You're sleep deprived or whatever. And so that little adrenal boost
is waking
that adrenal
you up
boost
to
wakes
dial you
up.
In. Yeah. Right? So that's one thing, reason that intrusive thoughts are actually very healthy, because much like anxiety dreams that we can talk about in another episode, they protect us from making mistakes, because in your head, your mind's eye, you play out what how that mistake would feel. Now, you said that when you have an intrusive thought, it makes you feel uncomfortable, right? Is that accurate?
Because I can't, the notion of you not being able to control your old, everybody knows you can't control your mind, mm-hmm. but we feel like because it's ours, we should be able to.
Yeah.
We're getting up there in years or whatever. Mm-hmm. Not old by any stretch, but there is this, oh man, my body doesn't listen to me like it did when I was 20 years old. And yes. that's only going to get worse. And so the mind not listening to the orders I'm giving it
yes.
is always disconcerting.
Now, imagine that you occupy a mind and body that the intrusive thoughts that you have don't make you uncomfortable, that they actually make you feel really at peace and they make you feel really protected and really safe. Imagine thinking of harming yourself or harming someone else and you feel grounded by that thought. It's hard to get there, right? It's hard to imagine like having intrusive thoughts about self-harm and having that be comforting to you. But when we talk clinically about like suicidal ideation, which is like recurring thoughts of suicide or self-harm, that's what we see in a clinical presentation, that I think these thoughts and it makes me feel better to think about it. And imagine that headspace to be in, right? And that's where these intrusive thoughts can become important to clinical work you do as a therapist, that you start saying, okay, you have these thoughts about something happening to your kid and it makes you uncomfortable. That's adaptive, right? What if you had thoughts of harming your kid and it made you feel joy?
Mm.
More problematic, right? So we see intrusive thoughts kind of presenting in problematic ways for adults. But in kids, what happens, some kids don't have that. I'm going to get sidetracked, but just follow me for a minute. Do you golf? Do you play golf or do you drive? Have you ever driven a golf cart?
I do not play golf and I have not driven a golf cart.
Golf carts have this thing in them called a mulligan, which is like a thing that stops you from driving the golf cart too fast.
Shout out to Mr. Mulligan.
Shout out to Mr. Mulligan.
Named after him.
Named after him. So you can't take a golf cart over 20 miles an hour, for example, because it won't let you. It has a stopper that says you can't. So a lot of time we have that too. We have this mulligan that says don't cut off Tim's ponytail, even though you really want to, right?
Yeah.
Don't push Granny down the stairs. That would be bad, right? Don't do that. But a lot of little kids, especially kids that are neurodivergent, they don't have that mulligan. So you'll have kids that do act on their intrusive thoughts, that do cut people's hair in class, that do throw pencils across the room because they don't have something stopping it. So when you see a kid acting that way, that is like a good indicator that they need some additional supports and helping with their emotional regulation, or even something more clinical or pharmacological to help kind of regulate them. So that's often something we see in terms of intrusive thoughts and how we choose or choose not to act on them. So we started kind of light because it's funny to think about, like we all have these thoughts and they bubble around, they get stuck in our head. But it really comes down to how much you filter them out. And if you do have that mulligan in place, essentially in your frontal lobe, which we don't have to get into that, to stop you from executing these desires.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So connecting this back to the song. So we're talking about either music or more literally in the lyrics, romantic or feelings similar to romantic feelings that just can't get past. Is that that's interesting because when we're talking about regulating, is that viewed as something that should be regulated? It's like, or it seems like when you're talking about, I can't get you out of my head, we think of an obsession or of something that's causing you to not be able to focus, right?
Yeah.
And so it's viewed sort of negatively in this song, right?
It is. And I think that when you layer that on top of intrusive thoughts, like we do, there is a threshold of when these thoughts do become really problematic and really disruptive to quality of life. And we do see that happening for some folks. And especially for love and romance, like, yes, that mulligan's hugely important, right? That filter's hugely important, especially for adolescents when they're in that first infatuation phase of love. To learn how to regulate those feelings is an important thing for all of us to do.
Yeah, and we've talked about this in other episodes, just that feeling of your one-tracked mind when you're obsessively crushing on someone when you're 15 or whatever. And this is Kylie Minogue at this point is a grown woman. So it comes off a little differently than if this was sung by her when she was a teen star in the 80s, right?
Sure.
And there's this idea that this hook is so catchy, the la, la, la. But then all we get in the song is variations of that hook. And so if something's stuck in your head, it's like one idea, whether it's a romantic feeling for somebody or, you know, the feeling like I'm going to let go of the stroller. It's all the stroller and... what if I just knocked my baby's food bowl on the floor? Like, those are all variations of that same.
Yeah. Or thought. Me like knocking. I liked my intrusive thoughts are often me knocking stuff down.
Right.
Very often.
Like, variations of the same F to E melody.
Yeah. While I'm saying la, 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 swat, la, 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 swat.
Just I do think this hook would be a good. You think like, I don't know, whether it's a Wes Anderson movie or Quentin Tarantino, like an ironic juxtaposition of a visual against audio. So if the alternate music video of this is just Nicole going around ruining people's days,
oh my gosh.
This is a good soundtrack
it
for
really is.
Sort of jackass level hijinks of self-destructive and externally destructive
because
behavior.
It's so like it's a bop. It's so like poppy.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Vacher and me, Mark Papany. I also produce. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review.
And let us know what you think on social media. We're Never Music Pod on all the major platforms. You can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. And every so often, we'll do a mailbag episode where we answer all your questions, so please send them in.
Thanks for listening.